Buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. Today we're talking about fear. We're talking about the limiting beliefs that hold you back, both intangible and tangible. The things that most of us are scared of, and the things that maybe just some of us are scared of that hold us back in business and in life. And today we're talking about that with Sam Tornatore, who is a business consultant, a speaker, and an expert in the fields of not only sales, also neuro change and the ways that our brain can work for us or against us. We talk about productivity today, procrastination, and then we get into some off-tangent topics as well about snakes, sharks, and everything in between. Really, really great podcast with some lovely insights that are framed in a really interesting way. I think that Sam is a really cool guy with some amazing experience and a lot of things we can take away from this podcast. So today, I really hope you enjoy it. I certainly enjoyed the conversation very much. Here he is, Mr. Sam Tornatore on Coaches to the Moon. Welcome back to the Coaches to the Moon podcast, ladies and gentlemen. We're back this week after taking just a few days off there with Sam Tornatore. He's a trust-based sales consultant coming out of Brizzy up in Queensland, a very professionally dressed man and a head coach for one of our previous guests, one of my favorite guests of all time, Mr. Ari Gulper. Inside of all his sales training and work, what we're going to talk to Sam today about is productivity, mindset, and a line which I found on his website or socials, which said he helps overwhelmed business owners to stop worrying about work at night, which is something I'm sure we can all resonate with and appreciate. So Sam, mate, we've already had a little bit of a hello, but once again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Alex. My pleasure to be here. And
Good stuff, man. So we were just talking about before I started commenting on your superficial appearance and how I figured you were from Southern Italy. I love Italy. I worked in Italian restaurants for about 10 years and I got a lot of mates from over there. And so it's got a special place in my heart, although it's a little tough to get over there now that I have twin 2-year-old daughters. But we were just talking about how I noticed the book behind you, Unlock the Sales Game by Ari Gulper. He was a guest that I had on a long time ago on this show. And he talks about trust-based selling. And I really, really love that concept. We talk about sales a lot on this show. It wasn't why I got you on today, but I had to just mention that. Talk to me about how you work with Ari and what you do in the sales space and how that helps people on a daily basis.
Yeah, Alex, look, probably best to give you some insight how I got involved working with Ari. I've been following Ari for probably about a good 15 years in my own personal development career. I taught people in seminars and I ran seminars, did a lot of public speaking, and part of my own development is that, you know, I'm always looking for mentors, always learning. Came across Ari about 15 years ago, as I mentioned, and just absolutely loved his material. It totally transformed the way I sold, and I just became more and more immersed in it. And probably around COVID time, I just got more involved in learning his material. You know, I became a student of his. You know, we had a business relationship where I was one of, you know, just learnt his materials, you know, and I attended his work. And then after a little bit of time, Ari said, look, you know, would you consider being trained by me personally and becoming one of my coaches? And he asked me and a couple of other people around the world, there's about 6 of us all together, I think. And so, yeah, embraced his materials. I've been working with him now, and I do a lot of work with the American Financial Advisors, all around the same thing, which is how to sell with trust, which isn't really selling at all. It's all about problem solving. So, and you know what, Alex, it's just taken the entire pressure off the way I sell anything these days. And I love it because it becomes more of a human approach. No longer do you feel the pressure of trying to sell something. You don't feel the pressure of an agenda and, you know, pressure of an outcome. These days, my conversations are just so natural. It's just about engaging with people in a human way, listening to their issues or problems. If they've got a problem, then having them own it just simply by their own admission, if it's something they want to do some work on or help with, or if they need anything. And there's just a natural flow. So that's the process, and it's called trust-based selling. I love it. I breathe it. And that's my journey. And then that's how I ended up doing work with Ari. And I just think the world just needs more trust. There's just way too much selling, pitching going on, and not enough trust building. That's the bottom line.
Dude, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. And I think that in as someone who, you only look a couple of years older than me there, Sam, but as someone who I came into business about 8 years ago into online business, service-based. Before that, I was in hospitality. So I was selling wine, upselling things in restaurants. But when it came into selling high-ticket products and coaching, that sort of thing, you definitely, in the early days, get hyped up by your Jordan Belforts and your Grant Cardones who are closing deals, that sort of thing. Really, really fun. You know, it helps you to build some resilience and some confidence. But what I find these days, having matured in my own business, I'm resonating so much with what you're saying, because in a client and service-based business, where it's not a here's your product, see you later, there's a relationship. You've got to get off and you've got to start on the same page, and you really need to just manage expectations, talk authentically and honestly for that relationship to be a good one anyway. So there's no point getting someone in by closing a deal, I believe, if they're not the right fit, even if you're the best salesperson ever, because then it's just going to make your life a nightmare.
Look, absolutely. And that's the conditioning we've all had. You know, I used to be that person as well. Always be closing. You know, we've had so many gurus tell us. And look,
I did on my bloody arm, mate. Always be closing. It's my dad's favorite quote from Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah. A classic. And look, at one point in time, you know, 5 years ago beyond, they were all good strategies. They all worked, and you had to be that, as much as it was maybe a little bit unnatural, but you had to be that if you had to sell. But times have changed. The market's changed. People have changed. Trust is at an all-time low. I mean, you talk to people, people know that. So you can't sell like that anymore, because it's not effective. So, you know, we all need an upgrade in our thinking. We all need to just change our, you know, what some of the gurus have told us. We just need to rearrange it, shift our thinking with a different approach. And you know what? The best thing, Alex, it's just more human. It's more normal. And so just a joy for everybody.
We need more of it. I believe that at the moment, we all need to be able to listen to people we disagree with a little more, have conversations. And to quote a guest we had on about 3 weeks ago, a guy called Peter Andrew, the collaboration guy, we need to have more collaborative conversations. And that's what he calls pitching, having a collaborative conversation where there's a beneficial outcome for both parties. And yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. It's really cool. What a dream to have a coach who you really respect and follow to then ask you to work with them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, it's a big dream, and it's great.
What were you selling before you got in with Ari?
My entire career, apart from my corporate background, like I used to be involved in the whole corporate scene, you know, worked for some big companies, and that was great. But probably 20 years back, always selling personal development seminars, where I actually was the facilitator. I'd go to random offices, businesses, corporations, and I would do a presentation there. And on the strength of that, they would want to come to my seminar. So I was selling seats at seminars, basically, where I was the facilitator. And the whole seminar was all around what I always love, which is personal development. It's about helping people be the people they want to be, achieve the results they want to have. And just two things I specialized in was always helping people beat procrastination. Because I think for a lot of people, especially now, this information is everywhere. We're not really starved with the how-to. It's a lot of it is, you know, getting it into our mind where we want to do it and not procrastinate over it. So I spent a lot of years doing teaching people how to beat procrastination. And then with that came my next favorite area, which I could talk for hours and hours on, is just this concept of doing more with less. It's about productivity. And man, you know, this day and age, we're just bombarded with so many things I want to take away from our productivity. And it's just a constant fight. But, you know, what I teach now and what I apply to myself, I constantly keep researching, working out what works and what doesn't work. But, you know, to answer your question in a long version is that I help people just do more. I help people reorient their day so they can do the things that are important and cut out the stuff that's not, so they can get the results thereafter. We're all capable of it. Here's the crazy part. We all have 24 hours of our day. People say, oh, I want more time. Man, that's never going to happen because we've only got 24. It's never going to happen to anybody else. That's it. So the key is, what do you do with the 24 hours that you have? You can either focus on doing the things that you know are essential, or you can focus on the things that aren't. And that's really the difference, Alex. So that's what I've been doing for the last 20 years, becoming increasingly more passionate, as you can tell, as I go, helping more people. And I think, you know, last count was over 10,000 people that I've actually had some kind of impact on with those two philosophies alone: helping people beat procrastination and improve their time management. Even though I don't like that word anymore, but
the big number to hit 10,000. Congrats, Matt. And I can tell that you're passionate about it, which is really cool. I want to get into a bunch of stuff that you just said, but before we do,
sure.
Everyone's got 24 hours in a day thing. This is something that is very, very true and also somewhat overused by a few sort of hustle porn gurus out there who are just like, work harder. Beyonce has got 24 hours in a day. So I'd just like to know, I'd love to get your opinion on people like, you know, people like Grant Cardone, people like Gary Vee, who just, you know, just live and breathe hustle and work. And while they do have families and stuff like that, I feel like sometimes, at least for me, and the way that I value my time with, you know, work and exercise and kids and stuff, I feel that their style never resonated with me, or maybe even changed my expectations of what you needed to do to be successful. So as someone who's been in this game long before they started preaching that, and now that they've softened a little bit, what are your thoughts on this grind all day, wake up at 4 a.m. mentality?
Well, look, it's not exactly the most effective strategy. I grind, because there are times we're at our peak and there are times when we're not, and there's times where we do need to relax. Unfortunately, we just can't go at red line all the time. We become, at first we think, oh yeah, I'm quite effective, but it doesn't take long for you to become actually ineffective. You know, Stephen Covey said it so well. He said, you got to take time to sharpen the saw. It's his seventh habit. You know, you go around with a blunt saw all the time, eventually, you know, that's going to get ineffective, and you've got to stop, take time, sharpen that saw to get re-effective again. So that's the first thing I suggest when I hear people just going a million miles an hour all the time. Then I'm thinking to myself, you know what, someone needs to just put the pace down a bit every now and then, right? There's a time for it. But I think the biggest thing, Alex, that happens for a lot of people is they get caught up in thinking that they've got to do everything. And they've got to do everything, and it's all on them. And they get involved in things that they're just not that good at or doesn't yield the biggest return for them, right? So does that part make sense?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, busy work, right? Yeah. Being busy for the sake of being busy, wearing that badge of honor.
Absolutely. And sometimes people get busy, it's still like they justify things. Oh man, I'm so busy. I'm busy. You know, like, look at me. I've got stuff going on, you know. Yeah, got stuff going on. But is it the stuff that you need to do? Is it the stuff that's going to produce the most return? Give you the biggest sense of fulfillment and contribution? Not always.
Yeah, I used to own a cafe, and it was in a corporate building. It was the bottom floor of a big multi-story office building. And I'd say 85% of my customers every morning, you'd say, how's life, Gabby? Hectic. There's so much on my plate at the moment. Hectic as usual. And it was mostly the guys who were the MDs and the CEOs of these companies who had the time to stop and chat. And they'd been for a bike ride that morning, and they'd done a lot more. And it was the people in, yep, not, you know, this lower level jobs who were all awesome people, but they definitely were the ones who maybe overestimated how busy they actually were. And their response was always just hectic. I'll be better once I've had my coffee, Alex. Best go. And they're always late and they're always wet hair, that sort of thing. And I understand it because I've got, you know, kids in a business and stuff. But yeah, that everyone kind of glorify busyness, not business, but busyness is an interesting part of our modern day society, I think.
Absolutely. There's going to be times where you are chaotic and there's a lot of busyness. You are juggling many things and it's very hard because they are all are important. So, but those times are usually, you know, they're the minority rather than majority. If you're constantly living in that zone, then there's some things that you need to look at. And
I like to watch documentaries about
that's probably
people who are doing so much more than me. There's one of, Mark Wahlberg, the actor. He's got like 12 different companies, and you don't know that about him most of the time. But he's got a documentary series just exploring him, and he's got all these businesses. Plus, he's an A-list actor, and he just manages to do all of it. And he's just on the phone all the time, constantly stressed, constantly late for things. And it just makes me feel better about my one business and my two kids and my vegetable garden. So let's talk about that, because overwhelm is a big thing. And for me, you know where I think overwhelm comes from? It's not from actually how much we've got to do. It's how readily we are notified of what we've got to do these days. Usually, I was talking to my father-in-law a couple of days ago. He is the managing director of like a big logistics shipping company. It has been for like 30 years. And I said to him, like, what was your job like before the internet, before I even had computers? And he goes, okay, so what you'd do is you'd get in the morning and you'd have all your faxes have come in from the night before and they're printed out on your desk. And then you'd read through them one by one and then you'd know everything you got to do for that day. Whereas now, as soon as I get off of this podcast, I'm going to have Slack notifications and all these different channels. I'm going to have emails, social media messages, calls and text messages that all expect an immediate response. So is that a factor in overwhelm these days? And I suppose, do you have any tips on managing just the bulk of information that we get thrown at us on a daily basis?
Yeah, Alex, I'm going this way. Now, look, some of the things I'm going to say, I'm sure some of your viewers are not going to, or your listeners are not going to be happy with. And in fact, when I coach my private clients, I hit them with this. And you can see them going, oh, I don't know if I can actually do that, right? And I'm going, well, you need to learn how to do it because, it's gonna make the biggest impact. But you're 100% right. These days, we are assaulted with notifications, dings, dongs, apps, things beeping and buzzing left, right, and center. But you know what? They're all just buying for your time. All they're doing is that, pick me, Alex. I'm more important, right? Pick me. Right? So the absolute key, one of the things that I pride myself, I don't want to say something for 30 minutes that takes me 5 minutes, right? So the absolute biggest key to managing those things is you need to be really ultra disciplined and say to yourself, the block of time that I'm going to allocate to do whatever it is that you want to do, something that is important that you need to do. Let's say it would take you 1 hour to do that really important thing and it's critical for you. You get that 1 hour and you block out all possible notifications, interruptions, whatever it may be for that 1 hour. Now, this is what I say to people. Guard that 1 hour like your life depends on it. Build a fortress around that 1 hour. And no one gets in unless it's an absolute emergency. See, this is what I say to people, right? When you hop on a plane, your phone's off, your PC's off, you got no Wi-Fi in most cases, the world still works. Right? It all still works. So you can block out 1 hour, and if it's 1 hour in your case, or whatever the example is, and guard yourself with everything, protect your time like a fortress, make sure no interruptions happen. So people sort of, you need to get that concept first. The second stage is then, how can I actually do that? And that's when it takes a bit of creativity. But every time I've done this, and I'm talking every time, Alex, people can find ways delicately, creatively, to block out interruptions. And then once they experience the peace of working with no interruptions, guess what? They're going to do it again.
100%.
So And just, the one thing that's probably the biggest It's these things here, right? Or you've got, most people don't realize this, but they've actually got, you can slide it and it actually turns off.
Sam's holding up his bastard of an iPhone, by the way, guys.
You can actually turn it off and nothing will ding and dong at you.
I put my phone on airplane mode from about 9 p.m. until sort of 7:30, 8 a.m. in the morning. And it's beautiful. It's really tough sometimes. What I kind of helped myself to realize was that if I feel that something's got to be done today and I'm working late on it, 90% of the time the client isn't sitting there thinking, oh, is Alex finishing off that landing page for me? They're usually dealing with their own shit and watching their own TV show at that point. And they're not thinking about me finishing it for them that second either. So just knowing that, instantaneous responses and delivery isn't always necessary. The plane metaphor is a really, really good one. It's almost like when you're sick as well. The other morning, I was mega sick. I woke up with like a migraine and I just couldn't shake it. And I just kind of went back to bed for like 4 hours. And, that cut into 4 hours when I'd usually be working. And hey, presto, we're still here, aren't we, Sam? Everyone still exists. Everyone keeps strolling. So, no, that's really cool, man. And it is often those simple reminders that you can just block stuff off, turn things off, block out the time like we're doing for this podcast right now. You and I are not responding to anything else but each other. And that's a beautiful thing we need to do more of.
Yeah. I mean, look, the other thing that, most people get up in the morning, first thing they do, they turn on their email and just just start coming filters through and all of a sudden, bang, they've got, they're just caught up in the whole managing email. But once again, if you didn't do that and you let all those emails interfere with your day, you let them take control of their time. If you just discipline yourself to not do that, don't turn your emails on. Do something else, right? I even sometimes take my Wi-Fi off so I can just focus on what I'm doing. And that's the key, Alex. And I know I've probably harped on it a bit, but you've got to be able to discipline yourself to not fall into the trap of everything that comes your way, notification wise. And if you can just, get rid of the majority of ones, the rest will fall into place.
And listen, there's actually a lot of softwares and stuff to help you do that, right? Like, time limits on a few social media apps on my phone, somewhere I communicate to my family. I often speak to my, school friends on Instagram DMs. So I like to hop on there and talk to a few people, but I've got a 15-minute limit on Instagram every day. And most of the time I'm pretty good at honoring that limit when it tells me. It does give you the option to snooze it. And I'll admit I do snooze it from time to time when I feel like I've earned it as a treat. But So how about this concept of helping people to stop worrying about work at night, because that's not just a productivity thing, right? So talk to me about how you approach that.
People worry about stuff at night, their business, because they've all got a series of things that they know they should have done that day, right? Important things. You know that there was a client you should have made contact with, or there was a project or something you're working on, could be, whatever, right? So, but there's things that we all know that, and I'll say should have done for that day. We know that they contribute to your business the most and they are the most valuable. And when we don't have that, guess what? They don't switch off, right? Now they just start to transform and now you're worrying about it at night time thinking, oh man, all these different things I wanted to do today or should have done, and they fit into that description. So that's one of the reasons why we get brain overload, particularly at night time, because we start to sort of, be aware of all the things that we missed. So the only real true way to effectively manage that, and this is what I say to my clients, is that when you go to bed the night before, ask yourself this question, and you get into the habit of asking it, because the first time you ask it, you'll think of a lot of things, but drill down. Here's the question. What is the most important thing to do tomorrow? If I had to do one thing, what is that one thing? And the best way I describe it is that, well, tell me the one thing that has the biggest consequences, the biggest value, the biggest impact. You know what it is, right? Have a think about what that is, and then discipline yourself to not turn on your email, not turn on the phone, wherever practical, do that one thing first up and get it over and done with. And then you watch how beautiful your day evolves after you've done the biggest, hardest, hairiest thing first. The rest of it is unfolds. You know, I like to say to people, you know, be in front of the game, not behind the eight.
Eat the frog.
Yeah, eat that frog. Absolutely. Brian Tracy, I mean, he's one of my heroes. Like, he drummed that into me from a very early age, thank God. And it's so true.
It is. Eat the frog, for anyone listening. Why don't you tell us about the Eat the Frog concept, Sam? What's up, guys? Alex here. If you're enjoying the episode, please don't forget to give us a subscribe on whatever channel or platform you're watching or listening to this. Really helps us to make an amazing show every week. Thank you so much. Back to the episode.
Eat the Frog is a concept that's saying, of all the tasks you've got to do, one will usually stand out as your most undesirable, right? You don't want to do it. It's the hardest. It's the ugliest. Oh, it takes the greatest amount of effort. Well, Eat the Frog means if you get up in your day and you eat that frog, which is tackle the hardest, most ugliest thing, the thing you don't enjoy the most first, then the rest of the day is going to be pretty good after that. Everything you eat.
A little offensive to the Chinese and the French, who often eat quite a lot of frog and as a delicacy. You know, so they might resent that book, Mr. Tracy, if you're listening. I'm lucky enough to be involved in a little project with Mr. Brian Tracy coming up over the next couple of months. So I'm can't say too much, but our names will be on the same piece of paper coming in the next couple of months, which is super exciting. Okay, so I think that's really nice to hear. And you're quite well versed in sort of neuro-linguistic programming or neuro-change. Explain to us what that is.
Yeah, look, neurochange is about, you know, we all want to make changes, but we don't attack our change at a neuro level. So all neuro level means that the way that we think, right? So it's our brain capacity. And usually we're wired in such a way through our previous conditioning and, you know, as we're growing up and all this. So we've got a mental construct of the way that we think. And having the ability to change that construct, breaking it down, essentially changing our belief structure, removing some of the beliefs that don't work for us and replacing them with the ones that do, that process is called neurochange. Now, doing it is an effective way and a non-effective way, but once you get that right, then you actually change the pathways of your brain, you change the way you're thinking, and you create new habits, and that creates new change. And if you do it right, it's fairly permanent change to your benefit, of course. So, you know, it's been a really interesting area because we are all governed by our belief structure. Everything we do is consistent with what we have as far as our constraints, our paradigms, our beliefs. It's just the way it is. We don't ever act in it inconsistent with our beliefs. So we want new actions. We want new results. We've got to go back and make those changes in our belief structure.
Okay, yeah. So it's in terms of habits and beliefs that could affect us in our business, all sorts of things, right? Like the way you're programmed as a child, how you grew up, beliefs about money, beliefs about success. What else are you seeing as some major, I suppose, not negative habits, but what's the word? Limiting habits and beliefs that a lot of business owners need to break through changing their neuro pathways?
Yeah, look, I guess at a deeper level, there's a lot of beliefs people have around fears, right? They, they might not approach a client or a prospect rather because they think, oh, I might get rejected. And, you know, all these different sort of fear of, you know, maybe they're not confident and that's based on their conditioning. And that really sets us up because we don't take the actions that, you know, I say to people, look, you miss every shot you don't take, right? So if you have these fears, you have these belief systems that are holding you back, well, just by law of averages, if you don't take those shots, you're not going to get the results. But what if you just eliminated a bit of a fear, a little bit of it, and you just took a little bit more action? Then you're primed to increase your possibilities and increase your probabilities of getting more results. So it gets down to really making those shifts mentally and, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway in many cases. And once you develop a new pattern and you'll get some successes, or you might think, well, wasn't too bad. You know, the earth didn't explode there, no one disintegrated. You know, nothing major just happened. Okay, then you can develop that confidence to know that there is no real strong evidence associated with that fear, so you're more likely to take action on it next time. So that's probably one thing I see, is that we're all governed by a lot of fears. And look, you know, myself included, I mean, but the thing with me is that, and I guess people that are in this space, is that we're more aware of it, Alex. Yeah. Right? So I'm aware of it, and I go, right, okay, I know what's going on here, right? And so I can talk myself through it and then just take that first step or that action point then, because I know the pattern's going
to... That's why I suppose it's good that you say that in the personal development space, we're aware of it. And that's why you see so many coaches and speakers and entrepreneurs doing things like ice baths, you know, and stuff that just difficult stuff that just gets you used to discomfort and more resilient.
Absolutely.
Whereas one of my old mentors used to call them muggles, people who are not into the personal development, which I'm not really. I'm around it a lot. There's just sometimes a lack of just in-your-face awareness every day. So it's quite easy, what with how comfortable life can be these days, to listen to fears without really knowing that they're sitting there. I've got a friend called Chris Morrison, who's not listening, but I promise I'm going to get you on the show one day, Chris. He's got a tattoo on in his wrist, and it's an acronym of What If It Did Work Out. And I love that, just the letters, WIIDWO, What If It Did Work Out. Kind of like that numbers game. You swing for the fences, batty averages. The more times you try something, probably going to work out at some point. That's a nice reminder to have that.
The thing I love saying to some of my private clients that I work with, them, and they bring up this topic of fears, and it can be quite sensitive. Look, I'm not suggesting it's not, because it's very unique. Everybody's individual. But I say to people, I usually say two things when it comes to fears. I say, tell me where the evidence is of that fear being absolutely real in your life, right? You know, okay, you've been rejected by clients, right? Tell me all the evidence. Does it happen every single time? And if I had someone else in that situation, would they say, yes, that happens every single time to me too? If it doesn't happen to everybody on the planet always, 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 then guess what? It's something you've created, right? And so where is the evidence to support that? And that's probably usually the biggest thing that I suggest to people. And once people see that, well, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, it's some of the times, then I say, well, what if you just suspended that belief for a little bit? And what if it was just maybe a loose belief and a little bit of doubt? And what if we just pretended that it just didn't exist for a minute? What could you do? And it's always worth the risk. It's always worth the shift in thinking, because then all of a sudden the benefits and the success that comes with taking that one step starts to outweigh that puny, stupid belief or that fear, which is really false evidence appearing real.
I do believe you, but I also believe that it's your capacity for facing fears definitely grows over time the more you do it. Your capacity for pressure and discomfort.
Oh, yeah.
But when we have beginner coaches, you know, who've chatted to people online, but they've never really run an ad, and suddenly they've got phone numbers to call, that's a scary thing to do. But as long as you made that first dial for the day, the next day gets a lot easier, right? What are your thoughts about, you know, things like ice baths in terms of experiencing discomfort in one area of your life, giving you capacity to be more resilient in other areas?
Funny you should say that. I had my first ice bath probably about 2 months ago. And my short answer to that is that anytime we need to, we need to always be stretching ourselves. It doesn't matter who you are, how good you are. You need to always be finding, going past your comfort zone. Nothing happens in the comfort zone. I mean, there it does. I mean, it's nice and warm and fuzzy and all the rest of it. But where the growth happens is when you get outside of your comfort zone consistently. You grow, you become better, you become more skilled. You start to prove to yourself that you're capable of more, and you start to learn and develop, and that's how you enjoy life more. So I think as a philosophy, we always need to be moving outside of our comfort zone and doing things that stretch us. You know, when I read a lot of stuff with other authors, they're saying the same thing, you know. I think Tim Ferriss says it beautifully in one of his books. The stuff he tells you to do to get out of your comfort zone, well, that's a bit of a stretch for me. But anyway, you get the point, right? So, yes. I'd recently had an ice bath, and I've got to tell you, it was a mental challenge for me. My son was telling me about it. Dad, you got to do this ice bath. I said, Dom, I don't want to. And he goes, but you don't realize what it's like. I said, I just don't want to. I don't think I'm going to enjoy it. I don't want to go through the pain. Anyway, so one day he comes up, he's got this ice bath set up at the backyard, and he goes, I've got it set, we're going to do it. And I still resisted. But I tell you what, it was one of the most amazing, awesome experiences I have ever had. And I tell people, forget about what you think or don't think. Just do it and just watch what happens. I'm not saying it's going to be blissful for you, but man, the experience is out of this world. It was really, you know, there was a lot going on. It was really quite crazy. But at the end of it, I'm so glad I did. I felt victorious and I felt like a real champion. I remember getting out of that bath and thinking, man, you know what? I could kick some ass.
I mean, the primary thing was that you said, I don't want to do it. And that's the whole point. That's the whole point. That's exactly what my wife says as well when I talk about doing things like, because I do cold showers every day and it really sucks in winter. And I'm like, she does 5 seconds. I go, just make it 30 seconds. She's like, I just don't want to do it. And I certainly don't want to do it. Least of all, this morning was awful. But all right, so congrats on doing that, by the way. I'm not like a big ice bath guy. I'll just use it as an example. But all right, I'll be vulnerable. And if you should wish to, I'd love you to come back at me. I am really scared of two things. One is like caving, like small spaces. Like I'm a bit claustrophobic, especially when it comes to like those underground caves and those movies that you see people doing that. So I really believe that one day I need to get on a guided potholing or caving tour. And the other one is I grew up in England and now I'm in Australia. I live by the beach. I'm not a very strong swimmer in the ocean. I'm fine in a pool. I'm physically fit in the ocean. I shit myself, my lungs and my brain to stop working. And it really scares me that what if my kids were in there and I was too scared to hop in. So these are things I'm actively like working up to, exposing myself to in order to just change those beliefs in my head. Cause I wouldn't die, I'd be fine. And so if you're comfortable, Sam Tornatore, is there anything that you've got that you're massively scared of that you can maybe share with us that you think you should go out and do?
Yeah, look, it's interesting. I had this conversation recently with someone and he really made me shift my thinking about it. And it's often what happens, Alex, when we're scared of something. And look, forget about the things that obviously, you know, is obvious to everybody they should be scared of. Like we all should be scared when we're on the edge of a cliff and we're, you know, something's going on. We should be scared of gravity, all those things, right? So I'm talking about taking those things out and the things that we are individually scared about that someone else may not be scared about. In those situations, it usually comes out to, in this experience I have, it usually comes out that we have a thinking about that we've associated with that, whatever it be, that situation or event, that's given us some conditioning. Now, in my case, I still don't like them. I hate snakes, right? And I do have a fear of snakes. And it's still quite real. I hate them. I don't want to know about them. I don't like snakes, right? But recently I was talking to someone who was a bit of a snake expert. And I said to him, he said, why do you hate snakes? And I said, well, this, that, and the other thing, they bite, right? You know, they're aggressive, they attack you, you know. I've heard that if you're walking around, there's a black snake there, it'll come and charge at you. All these different things. You let me rattle them all off. And he goes, well, you know what? Most of those things you just said are not accurate. That's not what snakes are about. And he told me about, you know, snakes, that they're actually more scared of you. And the only time they attack is because they feel like they're being attacked. And if you mind your own business. Anyway, it's quite simplistic what I'm saying here, but obviously you went into a lot of detail. But it changed my view, Alex. All of a sudden I realized that, why is it that someone can hold a snake, have it wrapped around its neck, and they're not worried at all? And yet I'm thinking, I'm worried because I'm expecting that snake to do certain things that aren't necessarily consistent with what a snake does all of the time. So if information and reality about something that distorts your paradigm is how people get over fears in most cases. So for me, I don't want to go near a snake, but if I see one, I don't think I'm going to be as chaotic, panic like I was before.
Well, yeah.
Because of what he told me, and he told me a little bit. I guess the same sort of thing with sharks, you know. People immediately assume that a shark's in the water, you're dead. And that's not the case. You talk to any surfer in Australia, hey, they'll laugh at you. That's not the case. They're most times scared of you. Now, I'm not a shark expert. I'm not a snake expert. But I do see the philosophy and what people are
saying. Christian, who's the producer, you're listening. Let's hire a snake and shark expert to follow up on this podcast because Sam's misled us. No, that's really true though, mate. That's a really interesting way of looking at fear, in that you are, why am I scared of this one thing while Steve Irwin isn't scared of it? Why am I scared of heights while something skydive? And that would absolutely apply to business, you know, principles in business as well. Things like selling, cold calling, speaking. And I know that you're a seasoned speaker. And I don't want to ask you about speaking tips so much. I'm really interested in, because I've seen some clips of you speaking on YouTube, and you're a great speaker, and you have some really good, really good tips in there. But what I'm really interested in, just as a marketer, is when you are working with corporate, companies, and you are pitching them or talking to them, trust-based selling to them your personal development seminars and workshops, how do you approach that? Because in my experience, what you're selling, personal development, is a slightly intangible concept. And when you're selling to a business owner, yep, especially in corporate, lots of red tape, all they want is cold, hard numbers. So how do you approach selling an intangible thing to someone who just wants tangible results?
Yeah, great question. There's many different ways on how to answer that. But I guess if I could package it up, this is what I see with intangibles, is that a lot of people sell that sort of product with the assumption that the people who they're talking to want it and need it. And then the other assumption they make is that if they want it and need it, they're actually going to put their hand up and say, yes, I want to do work with you. And that's just the wrong way to approach it. So the strategy is always, you need to meet people where they're at and understand that not everybody wants the change that you want them to do. Even though you're in the business of change, and whether it be helping them learn how to sell better or how to be personally developed better, be a better goal setter, you have to understand that not everybody wants that. And so some people are very happy with their lot in life, and they don't want to change. Even though they're your target market, just because they're your target market and you see that they've got an area they need help with, doesn't mean they want to own it. And that's one of the keys. You know, you've got to, you know, a therapist's worst patient is someone that doesn't want to own their own problem. So the key is to first identify, do they have a gap in their life? Do they have a concern? Do they have a problem? Do they have something that they need, they want to actually get rid of or improve? That's the first thing. The second thing is, do they own it? Do they own it to the point where they say, you know what? Yes, I'm happy to do something better or find a solution, you know, improve my lot, whatever it is. When you get that, mate, the rest is easy. Right? The rest is a lot simpler. to answer your other question about some of the speaking that I do when I speak with people, you know, sometimes people say to me, you know, like, why is it that you aren't scared or bothered or whatever when you talk to people? And I said, well, look, everything I do, and this is where a lot of people go wrong. You know, people say to me, I don't like speaking or something like that. And I go, well, that's because you're worried about you right now. You're worried about what you know, your feelings. You're worried about how you're going to be viewed. And, you know, and I get that. But the key, forget about you here. Just think about what can you say to this audience that's going to add value to them? What message do you have that you've had experience with, that you know you've got a level of confidence over, something, some knowledge? And if your audience wants to hear that, give them the value, give them the skills, give them the insights, the learning, the ideas on how it's going to improve their life. And when you focus totally on your audience, it's not an issue, man, not an issue at all. In fact, I could talk forever about certain topics. Because I know that I can help people and I focus on that. It doesn't matter whether I make a mistake or not, as long as I'm giving, you know, value. You know, what's it, if I give 95% value, 100% value, it doesn't matter. They're still getting stuff. Mm.
Yeah. 100%. It reminds me of something a guest said the other week, another sales expert, when I said, what do you see as the biggest reason why coaches struggle with sales? And he said, they're selfish. They're thinking about themselves more than the client, which was more sort of tough love way of saying it. But the way you've just said it is a really, really great way of getting people past that fear. It's not all about you. It's about the people in the room. Nice job.
The best strategy I say to people, Alex, is that when you go into a conversation with someone, if you're a coach and you're selling something, then you need to have the frame of reference. Forget about what you're selling. Just stop. And focus on your prospect and become a problem solver. That's it. So your job is to look to see if there's a problem to solve. That's your first job. If someone has a problem to solve, his next job is to identify, do they want to solve it? The rest of it is a lot easier after that point. The rest of it's basically onboarding, really. You get those two right, that develops trust. And the other thing too, everybody's pitching, Alex. Everybody's pitching. Everybody's saying how great they are. They've got credentials. They've got testimonials. I mean, everyone's got it. It's just such a commodity these days. But the key is the only thing you got left, the only variable you have is your ability to connect with people, not in a sales way, but as a trusted authority.
And I can tell today, Sam, off the back of that conversation, you are a trusted authority in the space, someone that we need to be listening to a lot more. And honestly, mate, 47 minutes has flown by. I think that was a really, really fun conversation. Wow. I've had an excellent time chatting to you about some things we didn't expect to talk about. Fear, life and love. It's great, man. And thank you so much. And I really enjoyed having you on today. Really great tips, both tangible and intangible. And I know that people listening would have gotten a lot of value out of that. So thank you.
My pleasure, Alex. My pleasure.
It's been great. I'll have a little chat to you off air in just a minute. But if anybody is watching on the recording or indeed live, thank you so much. We love you for that. This has been Sam Tornatore with me today. I'll be back next week with another amazing guest on Coaches to the Moon. Until then, thank you so much for listening. Much love and peace out.